Happy Thursday, everyone, and welcome back to The Scarlet Edit. I am your host, Nikki Corbett, and I am excited to bring to you this month's first guest episode. You guys, this was such a great conversation. I think that whether you are single, whether you are in a relationship, if you are married, if you are the other woman, if you have been a betrayer in your relationship, you will get value out of this episode. My guest today is Katrina Polonska. She is a high performance executive coach and relationship expert. She has spent 2 decades studying human behavior. She was fascinated by love and relationships from a young age, and her own personal journey shaped a lot of her curiosity and how she got to where she is today. So without further ado, let's jump right in, and I hope you enjoy the episode. Well, Katrina, I'm so excited that you're here. I think that this is going to be such a valuable conversation for my audience.
Yeah, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me on.
Oh my gosh, of course. You know, it's so fun doing this. Like, I found you because a friend of mine from college had seen one of your posts and she forwarded it to me on LinkedIn. And she was like, I thought you'd be interested in this. And immediately I was like, yes, I am interested in this. And then sent you the connect. And then here we are now, just a short few weeks later. So I love the world of social media for those reasons.
I know. And it is a rare topic, right? Like, I don't really come across many people who talk about infidelity. Yeah. In a compassionate lens, right?
100%.
There's plenty of hate out there, but from a compassionate lens, I don't see much.
I so agree with that. And I love the way you phrased that because it is so true. You know, I did an episode last week and I was talking about waiting and how when you're in a relationship with somebody who is married, like you just are waiting and the waiting can weigh on you so heavily. And one of the most Googled phrases in the affair / relationship space is waiting for a married man to leave. But everything that comes up is negative. There is zero compassion. It is just all telling the woman, you're bad, you're bad, you're bad. And so I was like, okay, well, I want to put at least one resource out there where people can, you know, not feel that way and can actually like hear from somebody who had been involved in that. So I think what you're doing with your business and even your own story and the you know, evolution that you went through to get to where you are now is so worth sharing. So I'm really happy you're here.
Yeah, absolutely.
So where should we start? I think maybe let's share a little bit about you and kind of how you got to doing the work that you're doing. And then we can just kind of see where the conversation leads us.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think when I think about how I got into this world, which is a bit of a niche world to be in, right? Mm-hmm. My background is pretty different. I mean, I'm a social scientist at heart. And from a very young age, I was always really interested in the concept of love. Like from a philosophical angle, I was really curious about love and how it plays out and how society handles narratives around love. And I spent a lot of my academic career looking at men and women and masculinity and femininity, looking at mental health in different gender dynamics and where people are left feeling isolated, why there is this loneliness epidemic amongst men, like different kind of questions I was curious about, and how men and women and masculinity and feminine relate to each other, how they communicate, how they engage, how they love. And so this was a point of inquiry throughout my academic work. And later in life, I moved into behavioral science, where again, I studied this a little bit in more depth, amongst other things like high performance and the more traditional behavioral science topics that we see in leadership development. On a personal level, I grew up in a very nuclear family, very typical, traditional, you know, mom, dad, a brother, 2 kids. And my father's always working abroad. Immigrant family. We came to the UK when I was 5 years old. And my dad was always traveling for work. And this is probably a very common immigrant narrative that the father is the main breadwinner. My mother was working as well. She's always been a very strong feminist woman who will always work. And she loves her work so much. But my father was always abroad. Always working, always grinding, trying to pay off the mortgage and doing everything that he could for our family to thrive in the UK as an Eastern European family. And in that space, there was a disconnect between the two of them because they were both very career orientated and they were both doing it for the family. Again, trying to give the kids the opportunities that I'm very grateful we did have. in that space, of course, my father got really lonely. Of course, being abroad for around 15 years in total really wore away at him.
And How often was he gone?
He was gone. At the beginning, it was Mondays to Fridays, very McKinsey style, right? Kind of Mondays to Fridays and then back for weekends. But as we got older, he was gone more and more, coming back every 2 weeks and once a month, until eventually it was like once every few months. And what's really interesting here is how my own mother, again, coming from this Eastern European background where she's just grateful. She's grateful that she has a job that she loves, that she has kids that she loves, that she lives in the UK, that she's kind of climbed that ladder, that she's got a husband who's responsible and dutiful and provides. And she's grateful. She's not going to rock the boat, right? And again, communication is not really something that culturally was really studied or practiced in the same way that we see it in Anglo-American discourses, right? It's kind of something that you didn't really look at. And same thing with my father. He was grateful. Grateful that he's got a loyal wife who stays at home. He's got kids, again, who love him. And he gets to travel around the world and be, you know, more of an explorer, more of an adventurer, and go and make money. But of course, he got lonely. And of course, an affair developed, which in hindsight seems so inevitable. But at the time when it all came out, about 10 years later, was a real shock. It was such a shock to the family. My mother never expected it. We didn't expect it, which again, in retrospect, is kind of naive, right? Yeah. And that led to the real breakdown of my family unit. And at the time, I was 22, and seeing my mother and father go through this really painful divorce where they both got lawyers and they went down the traditional route of like, what do we do? It was awful. And seeing how much the legal system was designed, in my view, to pit them against each other, to really get them to tear each other to shreds, was devastating. I didn't want that. Of course I didn't. And I understood my father. You know, I had so much compassion for him even back then. I was only, you know, a young adult. But I understood. I understood that it's not normal to be so alone for so long. And so I ended up helping mediate my parents' divorce, which was a lot for me. Like, obviously it was a lot, right? And
I bet,
in the end,
yeah,
I had my own little nervous breakdown. I had a full-on meltdown at 22. And that's when I really started my own journey into exploring, like, what the heck happened? How did I end up here? So I had my own mental health journey in all of this. And I'd been on a mental health journey already before. As a lot of women who have absent fathers, I had my own challenges. And actually in my teens, I had anorexia, which was really common. I went to a girls' school. A lot of girls had it. And so that's when I actually started, you know, doing therapy and really looking at all of this stuff. But then the parent separation really sent me over the edge. And so in many ways, that was the beginning of the real journey into trying to understand relationships more. I ended up actually being single for 5 years after that. I cut off my own long-term relationship. And I spent a lot of time trying to understand, like, what went wrong. And then because I was single for such a long period of time, which in my 20s felt like a long period of time, I was really looking at, like, well, where am I going wrong? Do I have daddy issues? Where, you know, how is this going to play out with me? Do I have trust issues now? Do I have a strong betrayal wound? Of course I did. And that led me down lots of different paths, which I can talk about in a little bit. But long story short, what happened after that is quite interesting. I went to work in behavioral science. I was really curious about psychology. I was really curious about how the brain works, how humans operate. And I got engaged. And guess what? I ended up repeating a very similar pattern to what my mother had done. My partner at the time wanted to travel a lot for work. He didn't actually travel that much, to be fair, but it was going to be on the cards. And I could almost see a future where we were going to be in a very similar dynamic. And ultimately, that engagement ended because of infidelity. And it was so interesting to me how I ended up kind of recycling the same pattern.
Yeah.
And that is the moment when I thought, okay, I really have to figure this out. How is this repeating itself? And so I ended up spending almost a year, about 11 months of just being with myself. I moved back to London. I started working really hard on understanding what is happening on a subconscious level. Where does like infidelity come from? What is my role in all of this? Because clearly I have a role in it, right? It's not a accident that I ended up in this situation. So how did I play into this? What patterns have I been playing out that have contributed to the problem? And how can I take accountability and ownership so I never end up in the situation again? And that actually taught me so much. And in the process, I met my husband. And that personal journey really led me into consolidating my academic work and my professional work in behavioral science and going off and building my own business, which was never meant to actually specialize in this area. It was really meant to look at, you know, relationships and how to become securely attached and how to become healthy and happy in love. But what I found after working with a lot of high-performing people is that this is one of the most common problems. One of the most common problems, whether it's a person kind of being on the receiving end of the affair or being the one who's actually leading the affair. But it's something I deal with every single day. And in the process, it's really brought so much depth and richness and understanding and compassion to how we're all contributing to this collective problem, I would say. Because to me, it's a societal issue, right? I don't think it's an individual thing. Very rarely is it. So I don't believe that people are committing affairs out of some horrible, vindictive, malicious thing. To me, it's a collective pattern that we're in, right? Because we live in a very avoidant society. That was my issue. That was my parents' issue. That's the issue I see across the board. We live in an avoidant world. And that contributes to betrayal. And again, it's all very understandable. So I can talk about this forever. But really, it was this kind of interesting journey of being on the receiving end of it and knowing that, what am I going to do? Be angry? Like, be resentful? No, of course not. That doesn't make any sense.
Okay, you've said so many things and my mind is going like a million different directions because I have so many questions. Acknowledging the pattern where you the example you had throughout your childhood, what you saw growing up, even though finding out that your dad had had an affair ended up being a surprise and your parents splitting up was challenging. But then to get further along in your own, you know, growing up and becoming like a young adult and seeing yourself in a very similar situation and going, oh my gosh, wait, is this, am I about to do exactly what was modeled for me as I was growing up? And then to realize that, like, yes, that is what was happening, although you caught it so much earlier, you ended up not getting married. But that had to be such a bizarre moment to catch that and go, oh my God, wait, this isn't what I want.
Totally. Especially as somebody who really prided myself on being the person who knows, quote unquote, the theory, right? Again, I'd been studying relationships for a long time. I understood communication models. I understood attachment. I understood all these different things, but I hadn't embodied it. And so whilst I could sit there in my previous relationships and call out patterns and spot things and kind of read the room and be like, okay, this is happening, I hadn't embodied the change that I need to embody to actually shift the dynamic, right? And it's so interesting how in looking back at that whole trajectory and now looking at my marriage and seeing how intentional I am in my marriage and how I don't take it for granted, you know, there's a real, it's not a paranoia, but it's a real awareness that relationships aren't necessarily designed to last in our society. There's a lot of mechanisms that are going to lead to the relationship breaking down. Again, I would argue we live in a very avoidant world. And so in order to stay in a healthy, happy relationship, there's a lot of effort and intentionality. I would argue a lot more effort than not, right?
Yeah.
And it's through that process of awareness and having to embody the different shifts that I actually managed to get her. And so to all of that, you know, I do have so much compassion because it is such a common challenge that people are in and no one equips us for it. No one talks about it.
It's so true. And I think, you know, it is so unfortunate where we are right now is that, you know, with a divorce rate hovering around 50%, depending on where you live, sometimes some places more, some places less. I remember years ago, this was probably at least 25, 27 years ago. It was my first job after college. And I remember talking with a coworker and she was also my age. And we were talking about marriage for some reason. And she was so just like flippant about it. And she was like, well, whatever. I mean, if you get married and it doesn't work, you just get divorced. And I remember being like, but no, like, that's not what, you don't want to go into it with that mindset because, you know, that's kind of like setting yourself up for like, maybe it's like okay to fail, or maybe it's not, you know, worth it to try, or maybe you settle, or maybe you, you know, just say, okay, this is good enough and I'll do this. And then you get to a point where you're stronger and more confident. And then you realize like, okay, good enough isn't enough. You know, I want more. So, I mean, certainly it's like, you know, we're modeled after, you know, what people do is because what we see and what is going on and what's become normal out in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And there is this like balancing act, right? Between one of the biggest questions I get is, when do I know it's time to go? Yeah. So if I'm working with someone, even if they're not, you know, in an affair and they're actually just in a relationship, or if they are mm-hmm. in an affair and they're seeing two people, one of the biggest questions is like, when do I know it's time to call it quits on my marriage yeah. or my relationship? And I would always say, it's when there's no more growth left, meaning you can honestly say, I have left no stone unturned. I have taken mm-hmm. the time and the effort to examine yeah. my role in this relationship. How am I showing up? What patterns am I bringing to the table? Where am I actually contributing to the problems in our relationship? And can I honestly say that I have taken the time and the investment to work on this myself and to shift my behaviors? Can I honestly mm-hmm. say that I'm actually seeing the relationship clearly? Because there are so many biases that we fall into, especially when we're not happy with a partner, right? If you're seeing somebody else, you're going to start comparing them. If you've been unhappy for a long time, you're going to have negative sentiment override where everything is just negative to you. If you're insecurely attached and you've got all of your own wounds flaring up, which most people do, you're going to be seeing things through a faulty lens. And so my argument is always, you want to work on yourself first so that you can honestly say, there is nothing else I could have done. Nothing else I could have done. I really put everything into it. And I'm not saying that we need to do couples counseling, which actually isn't all that effective anyway, necessarily. But I'm saying mm-hmm. that you can take that full ownership and accountability. And then on the back of that, if the relationship hasn't shifted, or you don't feel at that point that actually the relationship's the right one for you, then you can walk away. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. And there are times when divorce is completely allowed. Like, we're allowed to end our relationships. But
oh my gosh, 100%.
To your point, not before you've tried, and not when you're finger pointing or blaming or comparing them. That's not fair. That's simply not fair, right? On the other person.
I think all of this that you've just shared is so valid for so many, for kind of regardless of what role you're playing in what relationship, you know. And I think about the woman who, or man who's being betrayed and knows that their significant other is cheating on them. I think about the person who is being the betrayer. I think about the person who is maybe the other woman, the other man, and getting to a point where you are asking yourself like all of those questions, like to answer that question for yourself. Should I stay or should I go? Like, and you know, I loved kind of what you said, like, am I growing anymore? Have I given everything I can give? Have we got to a point where like there's any kind of, it's almost like if there's anything left to do here. And yeah. I think that is one of the most challenging and hardest places to be, regardless of who is going to end up being hurt in that process. And what I mean by that is, in some instances, you're hurting yourself by leaving. In some cases, you're hurting the other person by leaving. In some cases, there's children involved that are being hurt because of the decision for their parents to split up. But it is such a good way to look at it all, mm-hmm. to really analyze, like, okay, is there anything left here for me?
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. And to your point about getting hurt, just because something hurts is not a reason to not do it.
1,000%. Right? Yeah. That's, I think, one of the hardest parts when so many people are so afraid and they're like, oh, well, I don't want to hurt him. I don't want to hurt her. So I'm going to stay. So, okay, you'd rather stay and like cheat on them constantly just end it and lick your wounds and figure it out and move on. Like, that's
probably one of the biggest patterns that I do see amongst high performers, right? And it's a pattern that I actually had myself, and that I think most people, you know, in my personal and professional life, I would argue who are high performing have. And that's the fear of being the bad guy, being bad, right? Because mm-hmm. if you think about it, so many high performers are high performing because they got a childhood where they were poked and prodded and ultimately criticized into being high performing. This idea of like, it's not good enough. You can always do better. You can reach for the, you know, shoot for the stars or whatever the saying is. Like, you can keep doing more and more and more and more. The world is your oyster. All of these sayings, which are very well-intentioned by parents, do breed in children this idea that like, I have to be high performing. I have to be good. I have to do these things in order to get approval. And if I don't do these things, if I'm somehow quote unquote bad, then I lose approval. I lose love. And if as a child you lose love, then you are going to be rejected. And if you're rejected, then you're going to be abandoned. If you're abandoned, you're going to die. So these are very primal fears inside of us that have been conditioned from a very young age. And so many high performers have this very, very subconscious obsession with being good, being the good girl, being the good guy, again, being that successful person. And so when you think about something like infidelity or breaking up with your partner and you're going to hurt them and you're going to hurt your kids, God forbid, which is one of the biggest wounds that we can imagine, there's a real fear of being bad. There's a fear of, well, I'm going to be that terrible guy who's going to wreck the kids and wreck my family and destroy my wife. Why would I do that? Of course, it becomes easier to then actually see somebody else and live a double life. And the funny thing with the way that these patterns work is because they're so deep in our subconscious, they become such a part of our identity. They become such a fundamental part of our kind of wiring that I'm just bad at my core and I have to work really hard at being good. And the way that the subconscious mind works is that it has to work to create coherence, meaning if I believe something on the inside, it will work to create it on the outside. So in terms of the data, in terms of my own behaviors, in terms of how I actually start to operate in the world, it'll be created or conditioned based on that internal pattern, that internal wiring. So if I have a fundamental belief or fear that I'm actually bad and I have to be really good all the time, I'm probably going to end up doing bad things unconsciously without even realizing it, right? Oh, or be very, very paranoid. And it's so interesting when I speak to my clients who are the betrayer and they will say like, I'm a terrible guy. I'm a terrible person. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. You're not a terrible person. You don't have to be a terrible person. You might have behaviors that aren't supportive and aren't aligned with your own internal compass of integrity. But behaviors can be changed. Patterns can be changed. You are not inherently a bad person. So we need to shift that at that fundamental level and get you out of this fear of constantly doing bad things and make it okay to actually speak up, address the elephant in the room, speak your truth, say your needs. Yes, the person might be hurt. That's okay. You can handle them being hurt and you can handle being hurt too. It's not a reason to avoid it, right?
God, I'm just sitting here and I'm thinking about all the people that are listening who are either in a relationship with someone who is exactly what you're talking about or who have been, like myself, right? I'm sitting here going like, oh my gosh, like so many of these things are just resonating. Because I think that that behavior, it also comes out and manifests in the form of this, I never thought that I would be here, but oh, I love you so much. And but then it's like, I got to go home and be the good husband and the good provider and the good guy. And with the high performing piece of it, I feel like most of the stories you hear, at least the ones that are more public, it is like more of high performers that are, it's like, you know, the boss and the employee, right? I mean, think about like the Coldplay concert example. I mean, God, that's going to be used forever and ever, but it was like the CEO and like one of his employees, right? And there they are. And do you think that any of it from a high performer perspective comes from ego and comes from power and, oh, I'm at this level and I'm the boss and of course I can have a girlfriend and a wife?
I think it absolutely can, 100%. I will say I don't work with those people because in my experience, people who have that kind of wiring don't necessarily seek help, right? They at least in my work, because my work is very much about, okay, let's actually look at the underlying patterns and change them because you want to get out of this. You don't want to cheat again, right? That's typically the people who come to me, like they want to stop it. They want to find happiness. They want to find their authentic selves. The people who, and I absolutely have run into this, who maybe don't have a problem with it. I actually had a really interesting gentleman on my own podcast who is a very prominent coach. And he was saying how he doesn't see a problem with it. He doesn't see a problem with cheating, right? And that there is a lot of enjoyment to be had from it. I would argue you don't belong in a monogamous container in that instance. Nothing wrong with being polyamorous, nothing wrong with having an open marriage. By all means, I would argue that if you're trying to live a life of integrity and authenticity where you can feel safe inside of yourself and with others, you want to have that clear structure, the clear boundaries around what is and isn't allowed, right? Mm-hmm. But to your point, yes, I think that there is definitely some trend, especially around men who feel quite disenfranchised, right? This is a really interesting statistic here, how women who are breadwinners tend to cheat less than men who are breadwinners. So the more money a man has, the more likely he is to actually cheat. The more money a woman has, the less likely she is to actually cheat. And I think that there is definitely something there around getting this kind of power, power high, right? Where maybe you feel powerful ostensibly with all of your finances and all of your business and your career, but you probably don't necessarily feel much more powerful internally. And so you need to seek that internal validation by getting power over others. Maybe. Okay. Again, I don't necessarily work with these people though. And I don't know how common it is. Now, if we're talking about things like, you know, toxic masculinity and the manosphere, yes, it's going to be much higher there for sure. Again, I don't actually really work with many of these people because they're not looking for growth. They're not looking for development, right? They're not looking to take accountability. And that is the problem, of course. Yeah.
Okay, that's so interesting. So here's something that I want to like dig deeper into. So the subject of like talking about like feeling good enough and settling, right? Because I think that that is a place where so many women can be in different types of relationships, whether they're with someone and they've been together for a long time, but something in their heart of hearts is saying like, oh, you know what? This isn't like 100%. Like I don't feel everything I need to feel. Or even a woman who's in a relationship with a married man and wondering like, okay, like, is this all I deserve? Like, should I be grateful that I at least have this because he's showing me things that I've never experienced before and I've never been treated this way and I've never felt love like this, even though there's so many red flags throughout all of it. So how do you kind of feel like you can advise people to get out of that mindset and figure out like, hey, like I am worth so much more.
Mm-hmm. You've answered the question there by in the very final statement, right? It's about working on yourself because it's very difficult to know. The biggest challenge I work with is people saying to me, do I stay or do I go? It's very difficult to know. Am I settling? Am I not settling? Am I being too demanding? Am I projecting here? Until you've worked on yourself. And what I do see very, very common is people get married in their 20s. They marry for very different reasons to what they would marry for in their 30s or 40s, right? In their 20s, it's going to be stability typically and building a family and finding someone who understands you at a pretty basic level. I mean, our brains are still developing until 25, right? You don't really know yourself. Mm-hmm. By the time you're in your 30s or 40s, you've probably made enough money to not really be financially dependent. Maybe your kids are a little bit older if you had kids. You know yourself better. At that point, you will also have grown, both of you, in your identities. And there will be a very genuine question of, are we actually a good fit for each other? Are we actually aligned? Now, I would argue that still doesn't mean that you necessarily need to leave your partner. That is an invitation to regroup and reorientate yourselves towards, well, what are we creating together? Who are we both? And rediscover each other, which is where I would argue, again, the beauty of monogamy is that you have a different partner every 7 years or so, right? Truly, your partner's evolving and you have to get to know them and you have to adjust and you have to reorientate. And that's kind of more challenging, I would say, than, you know, breaking up and going to find someone new and having the honeymoon period and it's all lovely and hormones and blah, blah, blah. And then it fades and then you're back on the hamster wheel of trying to find someone new again, right? Yeah. So there is this very natural evolution where, of course, we outgrow each other to an extent. I would argue that happens with most people and we have to regrow together. The difficulty that I find is twofold. Number one, if we are in that relationship and we have our own different patterns and subconscious blocks around intimacy, they're going to be flaring up like hell after a certain point, right? Again, the hormones have come down. Your kids are probably no longer so dependent on you. And suddenly all of your main blocks around intimacy, because you have intimacy now, are rearing their ugly heads. And when I talk about that, I mean things like feeling trapped, feeling powerless, feeling smothered maybe, right? Maybe feeling at this point that actually this isn't good enough. If we have a wound of not feeling good enough ourselves, no relationship is ever going to feel good enough, right? So this is where these midlife crises start to flare up.
Yeah.
And again, that's not an invitation to end the relationship. It's an invitation to look at yourself and see, how am I projecting my stuff onto this dynamic, onto my partner? Who is going to bear the brunt of it? Of course they are. our partners receive the worst of us, right? And when we feel so safe and when time has elapsed, of course, all of our stuff's going to come out. So that, to me, is the invitation to really look at yourself, do the growth. It doesn't have to take too long, but get to that place of, okay, I've taken ownership of my side of the street and I can now look at my partner more clearly and see how are we a good fit for each other, if we are at all, right? Rather yeah. than, you know, ending things prematurely, dumping all of your stuff onto them, all of your patterns, not working on your patterns, leaving your partner, getting to another relationship, and then guess what? Same thing happens. There's a reason yes. why for every single divorce we have, the rate of divorce actually goes up, right? Like totally. Statistically, we're more likely to get divorced. So do the inner work.
That's what's so crazy to me is that like you get divorced once, the odds of getting divorced again are higher. Even like, yeah. I think we talked about this when we first met, if you get cheated on, so if you aren't doing anything wrong, if you get cheated on, the odds of you getting cheated on again go up like 4x. I was like, what? Like, okay, yeah. then what can I change? What can I change yes. internally so I don't attract something like that again? Because yes. that sounds yes. terrifying. I don't want that.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And it's an inner job. It's always an inner job. Our subconscious is 95 to 97% of what creates our reality. It is the reality, right? Your patterns, your beliefs are the most important thing here. And the second piece of the puzzle, there will come a point in your relationship where maybe you've grown apart. You start doing the inner work on yourself. You start taking ownership over your side of the street. And then you want to see, does my partner step up and do the same? Are they
okay? I'm so glad that you're saying this because I was going to be like, let's talk about communication. What if the other person doesn't want to do it?
And maybe they don't, right? And maybe, and I have a lot of couples where I'm working with one person. They do, you know, they step up, they improve, they feel better about themselves, they feel more secure, they're showing up differently. The partner will notice and the partner will start to say, you know, you're being different. Like, what's changed? And they'll say, well, I'm working with a relationship person and they're helping me. And I would actually think it would benefit if maybe you worked with them too. And at mm-hmm. this point, maybe the other partner does start working with me. And then we start doing some couple sessions and we have a wonderful evolution of the relationship. And I always call it, you know, marriage 2.0. Two new versions of yourselves together, recommitting. And it's truly magical. And there are situations where that doesn't happen, where the other person sees, oh, you're being different. I don't like this. Who are you working with? What's going on? I don't like it. You know, they get very paranoid. They maybe get jealous. Maybe they start deflecting. They don't take ownership over their side. They don't want to, right? It's too much. It's too scary. They don't have that growth mindset. They don't have that humility. They don't have that accountability. And at that point, you can try to change them, but I would argue it's not your job to change them. You can't be in a relationship with somebody who doesn't have a growth mindset and isn't prepared to take accountability for their side of the street. But I would also say, for people listening, you won't know that until you have done it. Because if you're sitting here telling your partner to go read this book, to go see this therapist, to go learn this, to look at this Instagram reel, whatever it might be, you're not doing it yourself, most likely. Right. You are still dumping onto them, right? And the only way that we can get a partner to change and to see if they're willing to change is by changing ourselves first and leading by inspiration. Because humans are tuned to each other. It's going to backfire terribly. Ask me how I know. When you start to tell your partner what to do, what books to read, the help that they need, it's not going to work. You have to do it yourself and role model it and let them mm-hmm. feel the benefits and then see how they operate after that. They might yeah. step up, they might not. And that's yeah. how you begin to know.
So how do you think or how do you feel about like traditional therapy? Because I feel like we're in this era, right, where therapy is all the rage and there are so many online services, all these different places where people can go and get therapy. And it's almost become like this badge that you wear. You know, people talk about therapy, people even make bold statements like, oh, well, if you're not in therapy, then like, I wouldn't even want to date you. And it's like, whoa, okay, that's like a big statement. I mean, I am someone where like, I definitely see a value in therapy. I don't necessarily think that, at least for me, I'll speak for myself, I won't judge others. But for me, there's no world that I would be like, oh, I've been seeing my therapist for 5 years now, but I have heard people say things like that. And I'm just amazed by those types of statements. So how can traditional therapy be a benefit, but also not a benefit?
And I'm that person who was in therapy for 15 years. 15 years.
Okay. That's a long time. Same therapist? Time.
No, it was different therapist. Okay. It's a long time and it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money. Like, I actually sat down. This is when I began my business. And I was like, you know, coaching and strategy work that I do is more expensive than therapy. Of course it is. But people typically need 3 to 6 months with me and then they're out, right?
Right.
It's like out. And you learn the techniques, you learn the tools, you apply the change, you learn how the subconscious mind works, and off you go, you know, go live your life. And in therapy, it's not that model. And so when we think about behavioral change, I love the COMBI model. And that breaks down to three components. We need number one, awareness of the problem, right? So like, what actually is the problem? Then we need to actually know, well, how do I actually change the problem, like the capabilities around it? And then you need to actually have the opportunities to change the problem, right? Therapy does one thing for the most part. And I'm talking about talk therapy here. It builds really good awareness of the problem. It helps us understand what's going on. It helps us understand the behaviors. It helps us understand like what's actually playing out here. But it doesn't necessarily teach us the capabilities to actually change it, right? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't actually give us the tools to go in there and shift the patterns. We keep coming back to our therapist. And we keep sharing our stuff with them and talking about the story. And actually often what can happen is we start to really identify with the victim story. So I had a client, this has happened multiple times, clients who come to me in their 50s, brilliant people. I love them to bits. But they tell me, you know, I've done therapy for like 20 years and I've worked with different coaches. And I don't know if this is going to work for me. I don't believe it's going to work for me. And the problem with that is we become so identified with our story of I'm the person who is unworthy and struggles in love and has, you know, women don't like me and I'm the nice guy. And no one, you know, these stories, that's really unhelpful, really unhelpful. So whilst therapy is great as an entry point, I would argue, and it's great for beginning to understand, okay, where might this come from? It's less helpful for giving us the tools to actually shift the behaviors, for us to actually take ownership over that story and change it, recondition it. It's also not very helpful for creating the opportunities to actually go and practice in real life. Because so often we end up, you know, this idea of my therapist is on speed dial. Why?
Yeah.
They shouldn't be. And so that's why in my work, I'm so hellbent on teaching my clients the tools so that they don't need me on speed. I don't want to be on speed dial. I mean, I am for the first 3 to 6 months, by all means. But after that, I want my clients to fly. I don't want anyone to need me, right? I want them to be independent and their own gurus, because that's how you're going to know yourself best. And the reality is life is challenging. We're going to work through one thing and then another thing's going to come up, right? It's like me, you know, I thought I'd arrived. I met my husband. I'm securely attached. I feel amazing. I got my husband. But then I started building a business and then I was like, oh, wait, I have all these blocks around like money and patterns around money and my worth and can I be an entrepreneur? So I had to go and do the work on that. But luckily, I used the same tools that I worked on with my relationship in my business, because it's the same stuff. It's the same stuff. When you understand how the mind works, you have a lot more power. And again, that's where therapy doesn't really give us that understanding and the capabilities of working with the mind, I would argue.
Mm-hmm. I think that's perfectly put, and I totally agree. So kind of shifting gears back a little bit, this came to mind. So as you work with these different, you know, men and women who are involved in extramarital affairs, and they're coming to you because they want to change, right? You said that like they don't want to exist in these patterns. They want to, you know, be a good person in whichever relationship they end up ultimately being in. So what kind of advice do you give them, or what types of discussions have you had when they bring up these other people that they've become involved with that is not their husband or not their wife? And because I know that I have a lot of listeners who are that person. And so I know they're probably like, well, what about me? Like, I got wrapped into this, and now this man or this woman is going to this coach because they want to break this cycle. But that probably means that I'm going to get, you know, hurt. So what kinds of discussions happen in that on that topic?
That's a great question. And I do something a little bit unorthodox in my work, and I've done this a number of times, is where I actually work with both people, right? Where I work with the quote-unquote betrayer, and then I might actually even work with their spouse, and I might work with the other person. Of course, everything's fully confidential, right?
Sure, yeah.
Of course, it's all fully confidential. My belief is that, again, the language of marriage and relationships in our society is pretty poorly understood. And no one gives us a manual on how to create a healthy, happy relationship, which I would argue most people are looking for.
Totally.
We're all pretty dysfunctional around intimacy, right? And so everyone's got a role to play, and everyone may well be unhappy in their own way and have their own blocks and their own patterns and their own subconscious conditioning, which is holding them back in their own way. And my commitment is to helping people become the most secure, happy, and fulfilled version of themselves. The relationship and the person that they're with is almost kind of irrelevant here, because that's a byproduct of their own happiness, right? Like it's the symptom. So I would argue that, you know, my husband is not the kind of the reason for my happiness. He's a symptom. He's an outcome of my own internal happiness, because I found someone who I can share my life with and bring joy with. And we align on that, but I'm not dependent on him. And so my priority is always to help people be as happy and fulfilled as they can be within themselves. And that might include all people in the dynamic, right? The person who's on the receiving end of the affair, it's a really like crappy situation to be in. It's really challenging. It's really challenging. And it's interesting because I hear so often from the person who's actually doing the betrayal that they would want to go off and just date and start this new life with this other person. But I would argue that there's another whole set of repercussions that happen after that of the very valid question of, well, why didn't you choose me sooner? Mm-hmm. And why did it take this long for you to leave your wife or your husband? And what is my role in your life and in this whole system that you've been having to navigate? And I've had to wait patiently on the sidelines in a lot of pain for your decision. There's an inherent powerlessness that comes with that. There's an inherent wound that comes with that. And that also needs to be worked through, right? So I have a lot of compassion for the person on that. And it's painful. It's painful as hell, right? It's painful as hell. And yeah, it's a very misunderstood position to be in. And I say that as someone who was, you know, I nearly got into a relationship with a married man. Nearly. Mm-hmm. And again,
it's a narrative. It's so weird because, like, when you're involved in it, it's like you don't actively realize all of these different terms and different ways of looking at that role until you're out of it. And then, I mean, like you just said, like you're powerless, and I'm just like, oh my god, that's so true, you know. But at the time, I wasn't feeling that way because it was just you're so enamored and you're so involved, and it's just so, you know, I mean, it's like the hindsight is 20/20 is always a saying for a reason, right? So it's just, you know, I got a note from a woman the other day, and she was like, it's weekend, and, you know, once again, I'm sitting around waiting because, you know, he sent me a text and was like, oh, well, I'm going to be doing this. So I'm going to be unavailable for the next few hours. And she's like, because he's, you know, off with his wife and like grandchildren, like doing whatever they're doing. And she's like, and I'm just sitting here like waiting and waiting. And I just, my heart went out to her because I completely understand. But it's also like, she's so entrenched in it and sitting here just being like, okay, like what more can I do? And like you just said, she's feeling so powerless, but also so stuck because she's so in love.
Yeah. And I hear you on all of that. And feeling powerless is actually a pattern that we fall into, right? A lot of people have that pattern of feeling powerless and of feeling trapped. And that in and of itself is a pattern that needs to be worked through. Because again, irrespective of whether you end up with a person or not, or you meet someone even better, it is still a pattern that you have ended up in that is hurting you. And so from my perspective, it's like, okay, take the guy or the woman out of the equation and let's look at you and let's look at the different patterns that are playing out here and whether they are serving you or hurting you, right? I'm willing to bet that with most people in that situation, there is some patterns around feeling unworthy, right? Mm-hmm. Around feeling like I'm not going to be chosen. I'm not a priority. I'm powerless. Maybe I'm not good enough, whatever it might be. Maybe I'm bad. All the classical wounds that I see in a lot of high-performing people. And let's change those so that, again, you can open your eyes and feel secure and healthy and grounded and happy and fulfilled within yourself. And from that vantage point, see, do I still want to be engaged in this dynamic? Do I still feel the same way I feel about this person? Or have my feelings actually shifted now that I've shifted my feelings about myself? And it's not to say that that relationship can't work out, right? My father's actually a really great example of someone who did cheat on his wife and has now been with, you know, the other woman for 15 years and is very happy with her. A much better relationship. So absolutely, it can work out. But I would argue you want to work on yourself. Clear out those patterns. Clear out any wounds around betrayal that may be coming up, because ultimately you are in a betrayal as well. You are being betrayed by the same person who's betraying his spouse in many ways, right? So all of that needs to be cleared out so that you can make a really conscious, empowered decision around what is best for you, whether it's to be with that person if they do end up choosing you, or someone even better. And that's the most important piece.
It so is. And gosh, I love the way you put that, because it just made me start thinking about boundaries. And it's like, it's so true. And I think that unfortunately, we get so nervous and scared almost to stand up for ourselves and to say things like, hey, like, this does not work for me. Like, I am not okay with this behavior, like, or I'm not okay with this type of relationship. So I'm going to have to exit, or I'm not going to be able to do this any longer. But it's tough. It's tough to get to those points, regardless of what role you're playing in and what type of relationship. I mean, even with friendships, we see things like that where we're like, oh, I don't like the way this person's treating me, but it's scary to say it.
Of course. Show me a person who has bulletproof boundaries. I don't know many people, right? I would argue, again, most people struggle with boundaries. And it kind of comes back to the point that we made earlier, which is just because something hurts is not a reason not to do it. Right. Mm-hmm. So just because setting a boundary might leave you feeling terrified, scared, uncomfortable, like you're a bitch, like you're a bad person, like they're going to leave you, like you're going to be left alone, like you're going to have to study. And all the flurry of fears that come up when we try and set a boundary, typically rooted in abandonment and rejection.
Yeah.
They can come up. There's still not a reason for you not to set the boundary. There's, again, in this avoidant culture, we've moved away from getting comfortable with feelings of discomfort because we're so able to get away from them. You feel uncomfortable? Okay, well, you can go do something to make yourself feel good. Go on TikTok, start scrolling, go have a glass of wine, whatever. I love wine. But like, you know, you have so many different mechanisms that you can do to get out of your discomfort, which we didn't necessarily have 100 years ago. And so now we haven't really built resilience to feeling discomfort in many ways. And that is actually one of the best skills that we can do, to get comfortable with being uncomfortable, as the cliche goes, and start recognizing that, okay, this might be a boundary I have to set, and I'm going to sit here and probably spend a week terrified, crying, feeling sad, feeling hurt, feeling scared that they're going to leave me, I'm never going to see them again, I've ruined my chance, blah, 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 blah. And I'm still going to set the boundary because I know that the boundary is actually in the highest good for me and for them and for our relationship. Because no relationship started on poor boundaries that actually worked out, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Those healthy boundaries are everything.
There are. Okay, so let's talk about that a little bit, because I think that is really interesting. So you said that you think that that relationships can work out when somebody is the other in a marriage, and then that marriage ends, and then it can move into a real relationship with that person. Yeah. I'd be curious to know what percentage of people, and if you don't know this, that's okay. This is just me like having a thought. Mm-hmm. I'd be curious to know like what percentage of those types of relationships actually do work out. Because I do think that it is pretty low. In fact, actually, I think it's like 5 to 7% of relationships
that like
end
4%. Up. Yeah, it's very low.
It's pretty 10%. Low. Yeah. I mean, and I've, you know, as you were saying that, I was thinking about a couple that I know in my own life, a couple that are friends with my parents. And this was, you know, years ago, but it was like the classic, like he had an affair with the secretary. And then, you know, they got caught and him and his wife got a divorce and then he married her. And now they've been married for probably, almost 30 years and super happy and in love and all the things. And so it certainly can happen.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
is rare.
It absolutely can. Yeah, I would say it is rare. But I would say, I don't think, and I don't have data on this, I don't think that it's rare because the person's inherently a bad match. Mm-hmm. I think that it's rare because people don't know themselves well enough to make the right decisions for themselves. And what I mean by that is very often what I see in affairs is that it's actually less about the person and more about how the other person makes you feel, right? Uh-huh. And by that, what I mean is the needs that the other person's fulfilling within you. So for example, mm-hmm. if I'm a CEO and I haven't been intimate with my wife for a long time because she had kids and she's a stay-at-home, you know, wife, and she's depressed because she's staying at home and she had to give up her career, and maybe money's not an issue anymore, but there's nothing really to talk about, and she doesn't really praise me anymore, she doesn't really give me any validation anymore, I don't really feel even interesting to her anymore, I have nothing to talk about. Like, as a CEO, let's say I'm feeling very flat, I'm feeling very disengaged, I'm feeling just very kind of run down, right? And then all of these different needs that I have of feeling validated, of feeling important, of feeling significant, feeling desired, feeling cherished, feeling valuable, feeling... they may well be coming from wounded places, but these are very valid needs. And these needs actually are what fueled the CEO to actually go and build this big business in the first place. If they stop getting met in the marriage because the wife is no longer candidly that impressed by it, and also she's got her own stuff going on, and they've had this disconnect, it makes complete sense that somebody new, probably someone younger, is going to find him more impressive and is going to give him the very things that he's not getting in his marriage. It makes complete sense, right? Mm-hmm. I would argue that it's not always about the other person and who the other person is, and more about what the other person gives them, right? The needs that are getting met. When that person might leave the wife for this other person, and suddenly their needs are getting met, and then that gets old, and actually the connection doesn't really have substance because there's nothing actually there in the first place, of course it's not going to work out. Right. Mm-hmm. That's why I say to everyone, before you make any decisions, you need to work on yourself and you need to get really clear on what is actually going on here in this connection. What needs are getting met? And can I start to get those needs met for myself so that I'm not dependent and I'm not drawn like a moth to a flame to somebody else to do it for me? Because only when my own needs are getting met and when I've actually worked through my own patterns of neediness and validation, whatever it might be, of not feeling good enough, whatever is driving me to need that connection, only when I'm sovereign inside of myself can I actually look at my wife, the other woman, and actually see who here is actually a better connection for me based on personality, based on values, based on where I want to go in life, based on who I want to become, based on what I want to create. And the same question applies to everyone else in the room as well. Do I even want to be in a relationship with this guy based on where he's going, you know? So all of that comes down to you have to do the inner work. You have to know yourself inside out before you can really see the situation clearly. Otherwise, we are being operated by our patterns, our wounds, and our unconscious needs, which there are other ways to get them met that don't involve having to start a relationship with someone. And so I think, it can work when the connection is genuine, when the connection is rooted in compatibility, in values, in more of a spiritual connection of this is actually who I really want to build the next few decades of my life with, not this is the person who makes me feel good. Mm-hmm. It's a very different connection, right? And I think that's where people get very confused and where a lot of affairs start and end.
Oh, that was so valuable, what you just, all that. That was awesome.
I'm glad to hear it.
That was so good because it's so perfect and it's so, so, so true. I mean, I remember years ago, one of my girlfriends, she was single. She had been married briefly, got divorced. She was single again. And I remember she was at some work event and some guy was giving her all of this attention. And then the next day he's giving her all of this attention. And I don't know if he was married or if he had a girlfriend, but he was definitely not available. And I remember she was like debating like, oh God, you know, should I let this cross the line or not? You know, I'm single. I want to have fun, blah, blah, blah. And then, but she had a conscience and she was like, but I don't know that I want to, you know, do that. I don't want to be involved. And then also, you know, we're at a work event. And so I said to her, I remember saying like, would you want, if he was single, is he somebody that you would honestly want to date? And that like clicked something in her head and she was like, oh God, you're right. No. Okay. And then, yeah. So it kind of like is exactly what you just said. Like, is this person somebody that you would actually want, or are they just fulfilling a need? And like, I think for her at that time, it was like he was giving her attention and she needed attention. But then when she really took a step back and was like, would I actually date him for real if he was available? And then when her gut was like, nope, she was like, okay, that there, solved. Yeah. Don't need to go any further.
And that's a perfect question. That's exactly it, right? That's exactly it. Yeah. And again, I see this so often with my clients who are the betrayers, right? That they're torn between two people. They're gathering all the data. They're going back and forth. And in the end, very often, I would argue that the solution is actually you need to be alone. You need to be alone. And not forever, but for at least a month. Let the hormones settle, right? Take that time alone. Let everyone have some time alone. If the person who you're having an affair with is the person you actually want to build a relationship with, I have a couple of clients in the situation right now, they are ending things with their wives. They are planning to start dating this other person. I'm like, take a month or two out. If you're going to spend the rest of your lives together, take a month or two out to be with yourselves, to reflect upon everything that just happened, to really take stock of, okay, what actually played out here? What patterns played out here? What needs were getting met? And how do I want to actually show up in this connection? Is it still a connection I even want to show up in now that they're actually available? Because that's the other thing that can happen, right? To your point with your friend, when someone is presented as actually emotionally available for us, mm-hmm. well, then the attraction might fade because it's actually, never about them, right?
Yeah.
So taking that time and space is a great tool and do the inner work. I cannot emphasize enough how important that is, because until you shift the patterns, you will end up in the same situation, which is why we get people who are often, you know, repeatedly the other woman, or repeatedly mm-hmm. the person who gets cheated on, or repeatedly cheating. It's all patterns. Mm-hmm. It's all running in the background, and we have to be aware of them. We have to change them if we want to actually change our outcomes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. This was wonderful. Thank you so much for all of your time and your insight.
You are so welcome. I wish we could do it in person.
I know, me too. And then we could leave and go to a cute wine bar.
I would love that so much.
Well, Katarina, tell everyone how they can find you, because I do have couples that listen to my show. And I know that, you know, so many people are going to take little nuggets of wisdom from you and ideally apply them to their own lives.
Absolutely. So best place to go will be my website. It's katarinapolonska.com. That's KatarinaPolonska.com. And you can find me on LinkedIn as well. So they can message me, tell me a little bit about their situation. We can talk a little bit in the DMs. I love helping, sharing resources. So absolutely reach out. I would love to hear from you.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And I will link Katarina's information in the show notes to make it all easy for you. As always, thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of The Scarlet Edit. I hope that you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed it. And if you have not already, please go and follow the podcast on Apple or Spotify so you get notified of new episodes as they launch each week. And if you have not already rated and reviewed the show, I would love it if you did. Thank you so much for being here. We'll see you next week.